This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, dude. It has been a long time coming to finally get you on for an episode, and it's so funny, man. Like as I was getting ready, as I was getting the studio ready, and like coming in here, we've collaborated on some music and we've talked here and there, but like for some reason, I feel like I know you pretty well, which was like a cool feeling coming into the studio, man. So I'm stoked to have you here screen to screen, and I'm stoked to have you on to be able to share your story. So with that, Nico, how's everything going, man?
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, man. Thanks for having me. And I feel the same about you. I mean, we've been chatting here and there, you know, collaborating. And also because I've been listening to so many episodes of your podcast, that probably makes me more familiar with you than you with me. So, yeah, besides that, I'm doing great. I'm feeling amazing. Yeah, and I'm really happy to dive into this episode.
Awesome. Well, yeah, Nico, I'm excited to really hear your full story, because you've been so involved with the lo-fi community. And I want to compliment you on your recent Lo-Fi Girl album. I listened to it this morning on my walk and during a stretch, and it was just a beautiful album, and I know that was well deserved. I know that you've been working hard to finally land that album for years at this point. But it's I've always seen you around, man, and most people know who you are, and you've been super involved and so I really want to hear like how you found the lo-fi scene at first, and then how did you get so involved?
Yeah, well, that's actually a long story. So I don't know where to start, but let's just start from when I started to make music, which is about, I don't know, like 6 years ago almost. And I started to make some beats because I wanted to rap and, you know, do some, I don't know, hip hop stuff. I don't know. So I thought I want to do my own beats, so I started to learn how to make beats. And after a while, I just realized, okay, I just love making beats, you know. And I just kept making beats and didn't really make a lot of songs, you know. So I just made a lot of beats and got better at making beats, learning music theory, and learning audio engineering. So, you know, just that. And on my professional working side, I was managing a bar. And yeah, I don't know, I really enjoyed doing that. And then there was an opportunity where I had the chance to open a restaurant with my former boss, and so I decided to do it, and we opened up a restaurant together, which kind of like threw me a little bit back on the whole music thing, because obviously, you know, managing a restaurant with about 20 employees and, you know, over 100 seats and 7 days a week open is a lot of it's a lot of stress, a lot of business. Yeah, that pretty much threw me back on music, and I got a little bit lost on music because obviously it was really time consuming. And yeah, I don't know, it was just a lot of work, and I thought I wanted it, but after a while I had to realize that it's so much work, and I was like pretty much left all alone to do most of the work. So when the second lockdown hit, I was just about to, I don't know, like overwork myself. I was feeling like I was drowning. And when the second lockdown hit me, I was like, okay, you know, like, this is not what you have expected your life to be like. You want to be free, you want to live your life self-determined, and now you're just being a slave of your own business. You know, you just like destroying and ruining yourself, your mental health, your relationships, everything. And yeah, I decided I wanted to make a change. And at that time, I just said to myself, okay, so if anything in the world is possible, what would you really want to do? And I was like, okay, if I can do anything, I want to move abroad and make a living off of music. And I said, okay, if that's what I want to do, then I have to find a way to do it. And yeah, pretty much at that time, I was listening to a lot of lo-fi. I was discovering it ages ago before. Like originally it was chill hop because I was looking for beats to rap to. So I got into chill hop and then to lo-fi girl. So it has been on the back of my mind. But I thought I really want to make this career. And yeah, pretty much with this approach, I started the project on Panda. You know, I made my first album within 2-3 months. I uploaded it to DSPs. And once it was out, I started to get on Instagram and started to find out about other people, messaging other people, getting involved with other people. And yeah, it didn't really take long because the lo-fi community is really warm and welcoming, and a lot of people were open to share what's going on. And for me, as like a completely new person, I just dove into this new world that was kind of like hidden in the very low realms of Instagram, you know, with all the artists mm-hmm. having like 1,000, 2,000 followers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. It was like a really tiny, hidden community. But I managed to, you know, find out a lot from researching and just, you know, spending my time with background information and, you know, just researching and looking for stuff. And yeah, this is the way I got involved. And then I met a few wow. people that I connected with. One of them is Aria. You know, he's still a good friend of mine to this day. And yeah, he was one of the earliest people that I you know, connected with. And yeah, one of the main influences to me in the first start was Casper. I don't know if you know about mm-hmm. him, Casper Dot. You know, he's a great guy. He was the first guy who ever collabed with me, and we made a few tracks together. And he introduced me to a few more of the hidden secrets, I would say, in the lo-fi scene. And yeah, that was really like the kick of it. And ever since then, I just got involved more and more. And yeah, I guess due to my, I don't know, hyperactive nature, I kind of like got involved with many people.
I feel you on the hyperactivity. And Nico, there's so much that I want to touch on there, man. One, I didn't know your experience going from managing a bar to opening a restaurant. Like, yeah. like opening a restaurant with a business partner, that is by no means a small feat. Like that is a huge investment of both time and money. And I can certainly see where that kind of led to that moment of feeling like you're drowning and asking yourself if that's what you really want to do. And kind of similar to that, I had a full-time gig, and it was an indoor SAM volleyball facility and then also a bar. Yeah. Which was actually a really cool job. But I was managing that facility. I was managing the podcast. I was managing a single lo-fi project at that time. I was still doing my electronic music project. I was still recording saxophone for D-Rock. I was getting into ultra marathon running. There was I just ran out of time. You know, like I was going 100 miles an hour constantly, and I did run myself into the ground, and I felt like I was drowning as well. And it was like, well, what's the biggest consumption of my time? And it was like, well, it's the full-time job. Well, 100%, like that's what I need to get rid of. But it provided that moment of clarity for myself to be like, well, what is it that I want to do with my life? And what should I pursue as relentlessly as possible? So definitely, it sounds like we had pretty similar moments of awakening in that respect. Definitely. And so when you went from that transition from deciding like, okay, I'm gonna leave this restaurant that I just helped create and dive into music full time, like walk us through what that transition looked like.
So I didn't transition into music full time at that moment. I was still building up my career. So I was living in the restaurant as well, you know, in the same building. And yeah, I got in a huge fight, I would say, with my business partners. You know, we didn't really work well enough anymore. And yeah, pretty much I had to move out there, start a new life, you know, do whatever I can. And I found a job, you know, it wasn't that hard to find a job with, you know, all the stuff that I did before in the same fields. It wasn't that tough. So I just quickly found a job that I could do in part-time, you know, so I could pay my bills and, I don't know, have enough time to keep working on my music career. And it was just the main important thing I would say was just the mindset. You know, when I left there, I knew that the job or whatever is going to come, I was just going to do them for a while until I'm able to make a living off of music. So I just looked for jobs that would support this endeavor, you know. So I found, like I said, found a part-time job, moved out, got a new place where I could stay and live. And then I found a different job that paid more and had less hours, so that was pretty good. And yeah, then at some point, my life was, you know, breaking into a new, or transitioning into a new phase. You know, I was my girlfriend at the time, and I, we were, you know, breaking up on a peaceful way, though. So that was pretty good. And yeah, I had to, you know, I decided what I want to do and where I want to go. And I don't know, I just wanted to take the step and move abroad as I had promised to myself before. And then, you know, the tides turned and things evolved and, you know, possibilities pop up if you look for them. And at that time, I was in close contact with my friend No Spirit, and he just started a label with two other friends, Fortune Cookie Records, and they were asking me, "Hey man, we really need some support in the company, and we'd love to have you aboard." And yeah, I took my car, I drove to Prague, and yeah, we organized everything. We thought that we vibe well together, and yeah, everything went from there. And then I decided I'm going to move there, and we're going to build up the business, and I'm going to work on my music career on the side, and that's what I've been doing the past month. Yeah.
Incredible, Nico. Incredible, man. Well, and it's a, so you talked about this self-determination, and you were talking about mindset. What, I guess, like, what were you reading? What were you watching? Like, what instigated this mindset shift or mindset development? 'Cause it is such a crucial part in taking on any challenging endeavor. And like, you can immediately sense it with people. Like when you're talking with somebody who is determined, like right now, like I see it, you know, one, I hear it in your story, but I can just like see it in your eyes. And typically when you meet people that are on that path, like you can just instantly feel it. And I don't know what it is, maybe just a level of intensity for life, I suppose, who knows, whatever. But it, what led you to kind of leveling up your mindset?
That's a tough question, to be honest, because ever since I was 18, I'm 27 now, by the way. Ever since I was 18, I was involved into personal development, and I tried to start different businesses and do this and that. And, you know, there were also some darker periods, you know, where I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. But yeah, just one thing led to another, and I kept developing over time. And I think just starting that initial path of personal development and you know, just bettering yourself on multiple levels. Of course, like I said, you know, life's not linear. There are some phases where you're doing better, some phases where you're doing worse, some things where you have to, you know, I don't know, work through some bad experiences you had. I don't want to say trauma because it's like, it's a tough word, you know, but you have to work through some bad experiences you made in your life. And yeah, and that might throw you back a little bit, but then, you know, you get forward again. So I think it was just my initial attitude I discovered when I was like 18, that I just knew that I don't want to work a regular job, because I couldn't see myself doing it. Just the concept of going to work 5 days a week from 9 to 5 in America, but like from 8 to 4 in Germany. It was just not appealing to me at all. And I knew that I tried it out. I worked in a kindergarten for a while, but it just didn't make me feel good. And I knew I had to work off my own pace, of my own, I don't know, feelings, of my own rhythms. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's pretty much the path, you know, so.
Yeah, Nico, that one, it's such a great point. Once again, man, I feel like I relate so much with you, because – I've had all of my jobs, with maybe the exception of one, all of my full-time jobs throughout my life have all been good jobs. They've all, like, really, they've all been good jobs. But there's something inside of me that just, I'm not content building somebody else's dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's so tough. Like, even that volleyball company that I worked for. So we had, it was like indoor sand volleyball. It was a bar. We also ran volleyball trips to Mexico where we had like Olympic level volleyball players come down. Like, oh dude, it was sick. Yeah. It was like it was a cool job, but it's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So like, I wasn't content. And if I didn't have the dream and the need to be a full-time creative, I think it, you know, I probably would have just retired at that job. It was sick, but I there was a level of discontentment in myself of just working for somebody else and not having the freedom of my time. And I think that's, I also have friends who, like, when I talk to them, they know that there is no way that they could ever be self-employed.
Yeah.
They just don't have whatever they don't want.
That's
it,
fair,
you know,
man.
Where
that's,
it's like,
that's
we
the
need
beauty
it.
Of diversity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It totally is. One, it's and in my, I think in my very late teens, so 18, 19, and then early 20s, I would always get so upset if, because I would have my friends would tell me of something that they want to accomplish, whether it be a dream or something smaller than a career, but they would, I would get so stoked. I would be like, oh, that's awesome. Like, let's figure out a plan for you to be able to make that happen. And that's where, you know, that's where the conversation would die, or that's where the action plan would die. And I used to, it almost personally offended myself. Like, I had a personal investment in my friends, and I would almost resent them for, I was like, you guys told me of this dream that you want. Like, why aren't you working hard for it? Like, what are you doing?
I can relate to that. Yeah.
And it took me probably until I was like 25, probably, well, maybe 24. Somewhere in between like 23 to 25, somewhere in there, I really started to accept, like, oh, like, not everyone is wired that way. Like, not everybody needs to pursue something.
Yeah.
And I became a little more peaceful of a friend, probably.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah, but it's important to realize, I think, that also, you know, when I was younger, I was the same, you know, and I always thought, okay, if you don't do that, you know, like, you're losing, or, you know, whatever. And it's kind of like a really arrogant way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I got rid of that, you know, after a while. But yeah, I eventually just had to realize that people are different, and that's beautiful. And also, that just opened up a new path to myself as well, because I could really start to see myself as who I am, you know, and discover myself more. And just from that, kind of like build the life that I need around me without judging it to be good or bad. It's just, you know, my individual mandala or puzzle or whatever you want to call it. That's just the way I am. That's the way I work. And of course, like you said, you can relate to me. I can relate to you. I guess there are different personality types or whatever, you know, like just pages that overlap at some point. But everyone has their own individual puzzle, you know, and you have to figure out what puzzle you are and try to build your life around it to be, I don't know, to like be happy, feel fulfilled and successful, you know. And success can be whatever, you know. It can be a lot of things. Like, if to you success is, you know, having a family, living on the countryside and growing your own carrots and potatoes, that's wonderful, you know. And if your success is, I don't know, being a billionaire and living a jet set life from yard to yard, you know, then that's also wonderful if you're able to do it. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's the most mature perspective that you can have. And I love what you said about, like, solving your own personal puzzle. And like you said earlier, life isn't linear. So it's solving that puzzle as the puzzle continuously changes, sometimes hour by hour, day by day, which is fun and exciting. But Nico, I kind of want to talk about, you mentioned feeling like drowning, which we kind of touched on, because that was a moment of of where you were able to catapult yourself forward and take drastic change. But then you also talked about those darker periods, and we all have those somewhere in our own lives.
Yeah.
But for a young artist who may be in that darker period, like right now, that might not feel hopeful, that might feel like quitting this music career, like what would you say to them? Or another way to think about it, if you could go back to yourself and talk to yourself when you were in that darker period, like what would you say to yourself?
I mean, I think generally the best thing I could say to myself would be something like, hey man, just look at what you enjoy and just focus on building that, you know, focus on doing what you like and building your skills around that, you know, like building your, you know, like just working out your skills and doing the things you enjoy and not worry about the whole concept, because the concept will lay itself out at some point, you know. You cannot plan. Like when I started all of this like 2.5 years ago, I never ever expected me to be where I am right now. Of course I hoped and aspired to, I don't know, be successful and whatever. That's just one part of the puzzle, but all the other things around, you know, who you connect with, which people come into your life that open doors for you, or this or that, or which friendships you build, or which opportunities come across your way, you will not know before. So as long as you got yourself in control and you're working on yourself and, you know, just keep on building what you're building and not worry about the outcome, it will happen at some point. And that's, I think that's the major thing I would probably say, because not just in my dark periods, but like within the past 2.5 years, you know, there were parts of the journey where it's like, oh yeah, it's not looking good, this is not happening, and I was scared, you know. I wanted something on the outside to prove myself on the inside, where I should just prove myself on the inside and then it will prove myself on the outside, you know. So but it's also part of the journey, you know. You have to learn and understand that you have to feel content, and you know, you have to have that all in your heart already before it's going to happen. If you try to take it from the outside and put it in your heart to make you feel that way, it will never work. So yeah, pretty much.
Nico, dude, beautifully said, man. Like even this morning I was having a more panicked morning than I've had probably in like months. I just have so many things going on with Crystal Grids project growth, and we're looking for new management right now, and so it's a ton of conversations. It's more rejection than I typically like to have, and then I have that coupled on top of just everything that I'm doing within the lo-fi community as well. And like this morning, it was I was going for my walk, and it was like my mind was just constantly running 100 miles an hour, and I have the tools, right? Like I know meditation practices. I know, okay, man, go for a walk, stretch. Like I know what to do in those moments, but those moments still happen. And then I've also, so I'm running a 60 kilometer race tomorrow. Wow. Through the mountains. Yeah. And so this week, my running mileage has been a lot lower. And so even in, like, I just want to go run. Yeah. Right. Like, 'cause that's typically my main energy outlet. So even this morning, as I'm like freaking out, I'm like, dude, you're about to go exhaust yourself tomorrow. Like you're going to be fine. And I know I will be too. I know that, you know, 20 miles into my adventure tomorrow, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, everything's all good. But even in, if you would have asked me a year ago or 2 years ago, like looking at my current statistics in all areas of my life right now, it's like, I would consider that successful, you know. Yeah. But even once you reach that level, you still have, or I still have that fear that creeps in, or that doubt that creeps in. I think I'm just fortunate now to, one, have people to talk to. I have a team around me that I can talk to, and I also have tools, and I also have experience. because of how many times I've had those moments of panic. But
it's hard, it will never go away, I think. So yeah, we have to learn to live with it. And it gets less, you know, the more far you come, it gets less. But I think it will. It's an illusion that once you're where you want to be, everything will be perfect. You will start to
complete illusion.
Fall down. Yeah, if that's the case. If everything's perfect, there is no evolution. So, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're totally right, and it's such a hard concept to learn. And I think there's a lot of people that never learn that ever. When you look around at some people in their, you know, 50s or 60s, and they're continuing to chase something thinking that'll give them happiness, whether it be materialistic, career-wise, family-wise, just like the control of the situation, you can just see it. And I think fortunately for us, we have access
to be honest.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And, but I think fortunate for us, man, we have so much access to so much knowledge of spiritual growth, of physical health, mental health, like you name it. There's resources for us to like accumulate and learn about. Like just before we were, as I was, you know, I preached Stephen Pressfield, and just before you popped on, man, I was like,
because of you, and I read it.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. It's the most impactful.
Art, right? That's the one.
Yep. The War of Art, man.
It was a great book.
And I just, it's one of my favorites, and but I have it right here on my desk. And so like whenever I have a little downtime, or if I'm switching from Ableton Project to Ableton Project, like or I'm bouncing stems, like I'll just pull that out and read and take notes and keep myself level, which we're fortunate for. But, Nico, I think those were really great points, man. So let's talk about your move abroad. Like that's a big decision, dude. To move internationally. Like walk us through that process, cuz you've been in Prague for 2 months.
Moved in February, so
a few months. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, what a commitment. So you mentioned your relationship with No Spirit and Fortune Cookie Records. Let's dive into that even a little bit more in depth, dude.
Yeah. Okay. Where should we start? I mean, moving abroad, I think at the moment that the breakup kind of like was happening and I knew, okay, this is not going to work out. I was planning, cause it's been in a critical state at the end, you know, for the past few weeks, I would say. It was very, very intense, and we both knew there was something going to happen here. It wouldn't go on for that, it wouldn't go on like that forever, you know, it just wouldn't work. So yeah, when it finally happened, of course it hurt, but it was also kind of freeing, because I knew, okay, now it's just about myself, you know. Now it's just about myself, and there is no other person in my life that I need to think about, you know, that I need to base my decisions on. And we've been together for 4 years, so the past 4 years, of course, my decisions and everything, your life circles around the other person to some extent if you're in a close relationship and you live together, of course. So, I don't know, I just thought I wanted to move to the Netherlands. That was like my first plan, because at the time there was still the Chill Hop Cafe, and I thought it would be cool, you know, because they were looking for a manager at the time, and I was like, that'd be cool, part-time job, you know, get to work in the Chill Hop Cafe, make some new connections, you know, get involved with a new community and just dive into this new section of my life. And that was my initial plan. So I started to learn Dutch on Duolingo. You know, I'm still learning it to this day. I don't know why, but it's just so fun. It's a fun language. It's very close to German and English, but it sounds very funny. It's amazing. I love it. But yeah, I'm still learning it. But that was the initial plan. And then the Chill Hop Cafe closed down, and I don't know, things happened, and then the opportunity with Fortune Cookie came across my way, and that just pretty much changed my mind of moving to Prague, you know, because they're located here, and now we live all together in one house and run the label from here. And yeah, it's an absolute pleasure, and I'm super, super happy and thankful that, you know, that I had the chance to do this. Yeah, because I don't know, it's like a dream, you know, like you live with your friends, you make business, you make music, and yeah, it's great. It's exactly what I would like my life to be like, you know, especially at the point when the breakup happened and everything. And it was the first time where I thought, okay, if I designed my life just by myself, what would it look like, you know? And then the transition happened pretty quickly, luckily. Yeah.
Incredible. So it's you, No Spirit, and who else is living in the house and helping with the label?
Also, it's No Spirit's dad. He's like taking care of the finances and the contracts and everything. And then there's Saint Weekend. I don't know if you've heard about him. He makes electronic music and stuff, but he also has a lo-fi alias called Flaneur. And yeah, that's the gang.
Awesome, dude. Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. You guys just have a lo-fi house.
Yeah, and we're all Germans, so we all share the same mother language, which makes things a tiny... I mean, I wouldn't say I'm bad in English or anything. You know, we can have a great chat in English, no problem.
You speak incredible English, dude.
Thank you. But I still would say, you know, like speaking with somebody in your mother tongue, it's that extra 5 or 10% that make you a little bit closer than, you know, if you're mm-hmm. not speaking the same language. I guess. So yeah. That's pretty good, you know. I really
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, that's so incredible that that opportunity, like you said, like that door opened up at the right time.
Yeah.
But most importantly, you walked through it.
Yeah.
You know, you could have said, "Oh man, I don't want to move. I don't know if I'm going to move out of country like this. I might stay home," but you didn't. You took it, which
is incredible. I just wanted to get away. I really wanted to get away because I knew that I wanted to move somewhere else. I had that set for myself anyways. So that was kind of like the, you know, there was nothing that was holding me back. It was like all my baggage, I would say, just dropped at that moment, you know, and mm-hmm. I was like a free bird. Of course, I stayed for a few months in Germany. Before I made the transition, like almost half a year, I stayed in Germany because there was a lot of stuff to deal with, like getting rid of the flat that you're living in, arranging this, arranging that. There's a lot of, you know, background work that needs to happen before you can make the transition. But yeah, it was 4 to 5 months or something, and then everything was settled. So yeah.
Wow. Incredible. Well, kind of tell us more about Fortune Cookie, man. And I need to make it a point to get No Spirit on here to get his perspective as well at some point. But let us know kind of how did Fortune Cookie start, and then what's the current projection? Like, where's Fortune Cookie going?
Well, they started before I entered the team. I actually started to plan my own label and launch that, and then we just decided to, you know, combine it and join forces. Because I had grown a playlist, you know, and they had already set up the label and everything. So it was just a no-brainer, I would say, to like join forces and just work mm-hmm. together. But we're just working hard in the background of, you know, building up the label and providing a great experience for the artists, you know, because luckily, except for No Spirit's dad, all of us are artists ourselves. With multiple years of experience in the music industry, and especially No Spirit, he's like an OG, you know, in the lo-fi scene. So he's been there from the early days on. So we know what's going on. I often call myself the lo-fi janitor, you know, because I'm involved everywhere, and I'm on the streets of lo-fi, you know, like I get to see what's happening. I'm in chat with a lot of people. I know what's up in the community, I would say, you know, so... Funnily, I call myself the lo-fi janitor at some point.
That could be a great alias, dude.
Technically, yeah. But yeah, anyways, so we know what's up, you know, we know what's happening, and we know what artists complain about, what artists want to see improved, and all that stuff. And we're just trying to make the experience as great as possible for the artists, you know, providing them a great service, giving them the feeling of professionalism, you know, treating it like a business rather than a spontaneous thing that happened out of a lockdown, which, I mean, I don't want to front anybody, but I guess there are some lo-fi labels that operate like that, you know, so it's really interesting to take it from that perspective because it brings a lot of professionalism into this topic. Yeah.
Which is so huge, man. And I think a lot of my frustration even this morning of so as we're on this quest for new management and new booking with Crystal Grid and like not getting responses or getting no showed on calls, like me and my business partner for Crystal Grid we're just so, for the most part, on top of our schedules and our calendars. And when we say we're going to do something, like we do it.
Yeah.
Like it's that simple. And so when that's not reciprocated, it can be so frustrating, man. So I know and that certainly happens a ton in the lo-fi world. And I think in the lo-fi world for myself, I'm almost so used to it that it doesn't typically, you know, hurt my feelings. But for Crystal Grid and like the live show world, typically people are, you know, it's like live shows have a date.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so it feels different because like there is a very strict deadline.
Yeah, of
like
course.
That show's like, going to happen.
Take it to the soul, you know, you have to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that's one of my biggest frustrations, but it's coming from your for lo-fi janitor perspective, let's dive into that some of this stuff, dude. Because Nico, the scene can change so quickly. Algorithms can change, processes can change. Of course, like the editorial placements have fallen off a cliff for a lot of artists in regards to new placements in comparison to last year.
Yeah,
but there's a lot more radio play going on at the same time. So like there's just constant shift and transition and it's happening so quickly. So Nico, what are some of the biggest issues that you're hearing from other people in the community?
I mean, it's tough to say because it also depends on multiple factors, and there are different realms within the community, and every realm has its own rules, its own world that has its own problems. So I think it's hard to generalize it to some extent. But I would technically say, I think a lot of, like, the biggest problem is probably organization, I would say. Because I think, like I said before, the lo-fi community is kind of like, or the main foundation of the community, of the whole scene, is pretty much born out of lockdown, you know. So it's a lot of spontaneous actions that grew into projects that exploded, and then it's there, you know, and you want to capitalize on it, or you want to keep it going, or whatever. So things happen, things evolve, and I think that led to a lot of unorganized, you know, projects or whatever, because there's a lack of professionalism, I think, in the genre itself. And I think it's up to us, you know, to change it. Us as artists, you know, to treat people professionally. But I think there are also labels that, you know, don't treat the artist professionally in terms of responding, in terms of contracts, in terms of sending out payments and all that kind of stuff. You know, people are always on the hunt or are always aware and to see, you know, is this label legit or is it cool to work with that label and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And fair enough, you know, like it's not really transparent. So as long as you're not in touch with people that have been in the scene for a while and who have made their own experiences or talk to people who have made a lot of experiences, it's kind of hard to know who to work with and who not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's competitive, right?
Yeah.
The more artists that join our community, the further the saturation of the market is, like looking at it from a business perspective, and then it becomes, you know, more competitive.
Absolutely.
Who's creating the best music and you know, even for labels, it's like when the label is maxed out, when their workload is maxed out, well, they're likely just going to work with the artists that they've already built relationships with and have that process with. So it's natural.
Yeah, it's natural, not, sure. But it's still your own choice how you deal with it, you know, how you communicate mm-hmm. to the outer world and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's so commendable for you guys to kind of have professionalism and organization at the forefront, because I'm seeking that. I know I'm seeking that. I know a lot of other artists are seeking that as well, just because it's when a release date when it takes a month or 2 months to, you know, to dial in a release date. It's like, it, you know, that's hard.
Yeah, it happens, you know. It's difficult. It happens to us as well. You know, we're not perfect by any means, you know. But we just try to care more, you know. Like, don't try to care more. We care more. We try to be equally, how do you say, equally fair and give the artists what they deserve, you know, no matter of if it's a big artist or a small artist or whatever, you know, as long as, you know, the connection is there and the professionalism is there from both sides, that's amazing. And that's what we're trying to build
on. And Nico, you talked about growing your own playlist, and that's an endeavor that I've never embarked on, man. So kind of walk us through what that process looks like. And then what does that process look like?
I mean, for me, it was, I would say, like, in general, I just love listening to music and listening to lo-fi, and I'm just very in love with the genre itself, you know. I know a lot of great, amazing lo-fi artists that don't even listen to lo-fi at all, you know. I'm definitely not one of them, so I do listen to a lot of lo-fi, which is also part of why I said lo-fi janitor, you know, because I know about all the releases that are going on and who, which artist drops which style and which artist has which alias and all that kind of stuff, you know. I'm really involved in it, and that kind of like led to me having a unique overview of the genre and being able to categorize into subgenres, I would say, maybe to some extent, which there was a specific sound that I loved, you know, it was like my favorite vibe, and I just started to make a playlist around that vibe, you know, and because I knew of many artists and of their releases and of their release, of their catalog, you know, so I could just go back and build a playlist from that, and that's pretty much how I started it. And yeah, I to this day I still care a lot about the curation, and I'm very selective with what's getting in there and whatnot. And we could see it with Daniel, you know, Colors in the Dark from Sleep Tales. He did the same thing pretty much with his lo-fi sleep thing, and see where it is now, you know. So, I think just caring about it is pretty much the key essential. And that's not something that you can learn or obtain. Either you do care about it and have that kind of like specific unique taste or whatever you want to call it, either you have it or you don't have it, I would say. So I don't know, it's been a mystical experience, and it's hard to put it into words, you know.
Sometimes those mystical experiences are the most important experiences that we have in life, man. So Nico, with balancing your work with Fortune Cookies with your own music career, What are you doing right now, like scheduling wise, to keep yourself healthy and happy and balanced, especially living where you work? And that's something, you know, working where it's live is, you know, it's hard because you're working all the time. So kind of walk us through your like health regimen. Like what are you doing to stay healthy?
I mean, this year I started fasting. I did it a few years ago for a short while, but this year I really got back to it. And I'm pretty much doing intermittent fasting at least 6 days out of the week. I was traveling this year for a few weeks to Greece, and the Greeks are a lot about food. So during that period, it was hard to do it, and I didn't really do it. But ever since I got back, you know, I got back into it immediately. But I'm just fasting 16 hours a day, just drinking water.
Nice.
And eating for an 8-hour period a day. So, I don't know, like, I go to bed at like 2, 3 a.m., wake up at 10, 11, then I have, I don't know, start eating at 12, you know, I have my coffee, I have some food, some breakfast, and then, you know, I get to work, do some things here and there, and then at 6, 7 in the evening, I would have dinner, you know, and then I would just fast until the next day, until 12, and doing that is really just cleanses your mind, it cleanses your body. You feel you have more energy because your body's not, you know, digesting all the time. The good side effect, I would say, is that you also care more about what you eat. And I think the past 6 years or something, 7 years, I've been I've been vegan almost all the time, you know, not like 100%, but like for a long time. But the past 6-7 months, I'm totally back to omnivore, and I just started to eat. I just wanted to stop eating all this processed food and getting back more into eating more natural, unprocessed food, which I try to do most of the time if I can. And that's that's pretty much my diet, you know, eating a lot of, trying to eat unprocessed food, making food myself, you know, when I can. Of course, ordering food sometimes is also nice. But yeah, just fasting and, you know, drinking water, that's really, for your mind, it's really good. And also, I also take cold showers. At the end of every shower, I shower ice cold for like 30 to 60 seconds. That's also really good for you, for your mind, and, you know, for your... You feel so energized and so happy, and, you know, just like doing the fasting and the cold showering, and also I also work out for four or five months now. Also shout outs to Saint Weekend who got me into it. Yeah, and just doing all that, you know, it's like tiny things, but they occupy your daily life to quite some extent, and it keeps you, first of all, it keeps you busy, and you pretty much show yourself that you're disciplined. And that's like a subconscious message that you send to yourself, which enables you to be more disciplined and organized with other parts in your life, which is something I struggle with sometimes, you know, especially procrastinating on things that I don't enjoy. It's like my biggest hobby, you know, that's what I really love to do. So keeping up this routine allows me to be more disciplined on those things.
Well, Nico, I think it's one. So I also do intermittent fasting, and I follow the 16-hour 16-hour fast. And I think I'm probably like 2.5 years to 3 years of doing that. So it's, I mean, I'm just so used to it at this point. And most of my runs actually are fasted, typically up to like even half marathons. Like if I'm not running more than a half marathon, I typically just do it fasted because I'm used to it. Yeah. I do the first thing that I do when I wake up, I do Himalayan salt in water, just to replenish my electrolytes and hydrate. So that helps with running, but it doesn't technically break my fast.
Yeah.
And I actually, it's funny. I ran a 50 kilometer race in March. It was in Las Cruces, New Mexico. It was in the desert.
Oh,
and
shit. Yeah.
I was like mile five, and I think we probably started at like 6 a.m. I was at mile five before I was like, I didn't eat. I didn't eat at all before this race, which before a 50 kilometer race, like, you should probably have a banana or something. but it it occurred to me. I was like, just because I'm so used to doing it fasted, and so for tomorrow's race, I was even thinking about it because the only downside with that is for all of my runs, I always feel super light. Because I'm fasted, so there may be a benefit to it, but for like 60 kilometers, like probably just a banana. But
it depends on your body type and everything. Like, for example, for me, I'm also like that when I work out on an empty stomach at the next day. Like, sometimes I would even eat nothing until 5-6 p.m. in the evening, you know, and then work out. So I haven't eaten the whole day, and then I work out, and then I usually have more energy than when I have breakfast at 12 and work out at 8, at 6, 7.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It depends on the body type. You know, some people need to eat before they work out because otherwise they get dizzy or something. Or if you have, like, a problem with your body and you're, like, very skinny and, you know, you can't do anything about it, then fasting and living off of your body fats might not be a great idea. So, it depends, you know. So, people are different. But I can definitely relate to that. And running a 50-kilometer marathon on an empty stomach is definitely a great thing, and I'm proud of you. Honestly, I also wanted to say that I really respect you and the way you handle and organize your life and your routines, and that you're able to do so many things and balancing all of this at the same time. Because I do a lot of things as well, and I think it's great that you be able to keep up with everything. So, props to you.
Well, thank you very much, Nico. And it's been a lot of years in development to get to the level of productivity where I'm at. And just like you said, to the daily discipline. Like at this point, you just do a 16-hour fast because that's what you do.
Yeah.
It's just part of your schedule. And so for me, like waking up at 5. So like today, I told myself last night, I was like, okay, I have a big race coming up this weekend. I'm not going to set my alarm. And if I can sleep in, get a couple extra hours, like that's perfect. You know, I wake up this morning and I get up and I go grab my phone and I look at it and it's 4:57. And I was like, okay, well, I'm up, you know, just because, you know, my body is just trained for that. And it's in the first thing I do, I don't check emails. I don't check DMs. I don't do anything except for open up Ableton. And like I already have, I set whatever I'm going to work on the night before. And so like I dummy proof it.
Yeah.
Like I wake up. I drink my water and salt. I get the coffee going. I look at what I said I was going to work on. And then I pull up one of those projects that I said that I could work on and I dive in. And it's just so established. I've just done it for so long. It's just part of what I do. And in regards to the other organization, I just have it's what I call my daily memo, but it's a week. It's a Google sheet. And it has all of my non-negotiables on there that I do every single day and then other tasks. And so Nico, it's really the only way that I can do what I currently do now is because I've dummy-proofed it as much as possible. I've taken my human brain out of it as much as possible, and I just follow my Google sheet. And the more that I can just follow my script for life, the easier it is. And that's
a good point. Yeah. Cause I've been journaling as well for a while, you know, on and off. And ever once I did that, I felt way more content. And when I checked off everything, I could just relax without feeling bad or anything.
Yeah.
And I was also way more productive, even though, you know, I was less occupied and I should probably get back into it, I guess, journaling, you know, that probably be the next step to like, now that I've set up everything else, you know, on my discipline list, it would probably be a good thing to get back into journaling. And I mean, not just journaling, but I always combined it with to-do listing, you know, like it's kind of like one thing for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, both are, so I have like an emotional, spiritual journaling process. And then I have that daily memo. And for me, dude, it just makes my life so easy. Cause I never have to guess.
Yeah.
I never have to ask like, oh, what should I do next? It's like, oh, there's my script. And, planning it out. I typically plan it out, like Sundays, Sunday evenings or Monday mornings sometimes.
For the whole week.
Yeah. And that'll move. Some of it will move around. But I at least look at what I need to get done this week and I sprinkle it throughout. But then those non-negotiables, man, like it's just such an established habit. But even with it being an established habit, if I were to wake up on Monday and try to do it without my script, even though I've done it for years, it'd be interesting to see how many things that I forget, like if I can't look at it. And it would probably be like 25%. I bet I would miss 25% of my things, which is kind of staggering. So, Nico, I'd be happy to – let me put that in my notes, man. I'll just share that, my template for you.
Yeah, that'd be dope. Thanks.
Just because it makes things easier. Nico, as we're coming near the end of this, man, I want to hear more about the projection of Odd Panda.
Yeah.
Where are you going with music right now? Where are you going with yourself? Like, what is it that you want to accomplish in the next 3-5 years?
Yeah, so I'm just working on a lot of music, different styles, you know, and I've done that ever since I started. And I've thought about it many times if I should have an alias for this or that, or if I should focus on one sound, because, you know, there are some artists that are established and they have their own unique specific sound and they have it all the time, you know, but I just had to realize that that's not me. And I like to do, I love to do really energetic, upbeat stuff. I love to do sleepy stuff sometimes. I love to do the dreamy stuff for Lo-Fi Girl, you know. I just love to have that variety of music that I can produce, because sometimes I feel I don't really feel a lot like making something dreamy. So it's harder for me to work on that specific thing. You know, it's easier for me to work on more upbeat stuff. Maybe also because it's summer, the sun is shining, I don't know. But it's also, you know, reflected in the music that I listen to at the time. But I just don't want to put boundaries on me and just make the music that I enjoy and, you know, put it all on my profile. And if it ranges from sleepy to upbeat, that's fine with me, you know. And I'm just currently working on a few projects, trying to finish them up, you know, trying to get them all ready and set and submitted and move on to the next project. And I have a few collabs that I need to finish, a few singles here and there. There's always something, you know, to do. There's always something to work
always.
On. And I think just the main thing for me that I want to develop and that I want to get better in terms of music is just, you know, overcoming this fear of making something that sounds shit. You know, that's a big thing for me sometimes, because I'm not like a trained pianist or something. In general, I'm not trained in a lot of things, because I'm just self-taught in many things, because that's just the way I work best, you know. When I go, like, that's why I also was not good in school in a few subjects, you know, because I find it even to this day, if people explain something to me, it just pops in here and goes out there. I can't deal with it, you know. But if I have something in front of me, that's perfect. Or if I'm even able to tweak it myself, then I understand it perfectly. So that's majorly the reason why I'm self-taught in many things. Because if I get to work on it myself, and I'll figure out the way to do it myself, how I like to do it, how it works best for me, how I achieve the results I want to achieve. So, yeah, and just you know, like in terms of writing A and B parts, you know, like finalizing songs and just more on the composition side of music, and on a deeper level, you know, just making a basic loop is an easy task, you know, but like writing a full song is something without collaboration, because I've been collaborating a lot with, you know, great guitarists and stuff like that, is definitely harder for me, and that's what I want to improve on, you know, because I know that's more of a weakness, and just trying to balance that out pretty much.
Yeah, well, which I think is a great goal, and it's so funny that you said that, trying to not make music that sounds like shit. It's I produce music pretty much every single day. It is very rare if I ever skip a day of production, and there are a lot of shitty ideas that are never going to make it anywhere. Yeah. that are just going to live on my hard drive forever. And
I think embracing that is probably a thing.
Embracing it. Well, and it's coming from the War of Art. I think it's in the War of Art. It's one of Stephen Pressfield's books. But I think it's a line from the Bhagavad Gita. It's you have the right to your labor, but not the fruits of your labor. And that's a mantra. Dude, I live by that mantra every single day. So like this
sounds
morning,
like Rick Rubin as well.
I read Rick Rubin's book, and I love his as well. But I love that, because I certainly have the work hard mentality, and that's what's worked for me, and that's what makes me happy. Like, yeah. Working hard makes me happy. Yeah. I just love it. And so when things don't go my way, if a Lo-Fi Girl submission gets rejected, if we get rejected by management, whatever, I always remind myself of, okay, like the results, that's not up to me, but I don't have ownership over the results. I only have ownership over the work.
Yeah.
And that's, I think it's a pretty thing, solid mantra, at least for me.
Yeah. It's a great thing.
It makes life more simple. But, Nico, I'm so glad that we finally got you on here, dude. There were so many gems that you sprinkled in throughout this episode. I'm excited to go back and listen through it. And you're an inspiring dude. Our entire scene is lucky that you're our lo-fi janitor and keeping tabs on this scene as a whole, man. And let's get you back on soon, dude. And let's get man, I might just use you as my funneling system of asking you who I should get on the podcast. you might know better than me, man. So we'll talk about that. But Nico, I'm going to put all of your links in the bio of this description. So everybody tuning in, make sure to go follow Nico on your journey. And dude, it was an absolute pleasure, man. I felt like I already knew you before the episode, but I certainly know you now, man.
Yeah,
so thank you for being willing to share your story, brother.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me here, man. I really enjoyed that you invited me. It was a great talk, and I really enjoyed being here and talking to you and getting your perspective, and being part of this podcast. You know, I've been listening to it for so long, and being here, like you said, it just feels natural to talk to you, and thanks for having me, man.
Thank you, Nico. Everybody tuning in, as always, thank you for listening. Much love. Peace.